The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are now entering the Second Fiddle Comics Podcast, starring Mark Clare and Rimzo Martinez.
Respect my authority, or at least that is what Warren Ellis would like you to do. He'd like you to respect, enjoy, whatever his, well, it's not new now, but to a 19-year-old Mark Clare, this was a new and old book that launched in 1999, The Authority from Warren Ellis. We're going to be looking at that today, but yeah, this would be no fun to just read on my own, rant about on my own, as I often do behind the paywall on Patreon on a show called What Mark Missed, but this is not that show. This is the Second Print Comics Podcast. It is Wednesday. That means I'm here with my partner in comic book crime, the rambling one himself, Rimzo Martinez. What's up?
Mark, I love doing these Warren Ellis episodes because I don't think there's one writer who, by the way, love his stuff, deeply respect his stuff. But as I looked back at our catalog and saw the last couple Warren Ellis episodes that we did, I've given him some of the lowest scores and I've given him some of the highest scores. So
we did the other Stormwatch Warren Ellis, which I think you didn't rank. I think you ranked. I don't know. I was going to make something up. I don't remember.
I gave that one pretty low on story and art. Then we did, ironically, I think it was like one or two episodes later, we did his Invincible Iron Man.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, yeah, that got an SBC 20. We both gave that a 10. That was phenomenal.
That became like the new gold standard for a while. So yeah, you've got I consider, because you still gave a pretty decent score, I consider him like the lowest lows and the highest highs.
Interesting. Well, we'll see which one this is for you today, because The Authority. So first of all, if you haven't listened, I think it was, help me, I want to say it's like episode 16. No, it's episode 25. Okay.
Whatever.
We did Warren. Now, this is back when I was insane. I'm still insane, some would argue, but when I had no restraints on the number of issues I would try to recap. So I think it was something like 14 issues of Warren Ellis's Stormwatch that I recapped.
I had to get a bottle and piss into it.
I'm looking at it right now. This episode was, I can't guarantee we'll never have an episode this long again, but we'll never plan to have an episode this long again. It's one of our longest episodes, 2 hours and 13 minutes. In fact, it might be our longest episode.
Holy
it might actually
shit.
Be the longest episode ever. 2 hours and 13 minutes. It's rare we crack the 2 hour mark. I'm just doing a quick scan. It's our longest
Didn't
episode.
Didn't we do that like a month ago?
The 1602, we did 2 hours, 1 minute. I have the iTunes pulled up so I can see all the times. That was the closest we got, was the Medieval Marvel from Neil Gaiman. The 1602 episode a few weeks ago was 2 hours, 1 minute. But that one,
God, could you have imagined what would have happened if we did Crisis on Infinite Earths in one show?
Dude, even if we did 1602 in one show, that two hours was four issues. I mean, that'd be a 4-hour show. Be like doing Weird Science Times at this point here. But no, we have since, you know, reined it in a little bit. We try not to do more than, you know, 4 to 6 issues in an episode. Hey,
oh, wow.
Mix either of those.
Wow.
I've been practicing. I'm like in front of the mirror, like Ron Burgundy, issues, episodes. But anyway, this is a relaunch of sorts in a way, or spinoff, whatever you want to call it, of Warren Ellis's Stormwatch. And towards the end of that Warren Ellis Stormwatch run, Brian Hitch came on as the artist. And basically the behind the scenes here is Stormwatch was not selling well. It did not do well. They gave it to Warren Ellis as kind of a latch ditch, like, hey, Warren Ellis, why don't we put him on this book that no one fucking reads? I think Warren Ellis did turn the book around creatively. Like, I think it is a much better book than it was prior to that, where it was just your typical, you know, image. Hey, there's superpowers, there's bad guys, there's aliens shooting at each other. Not much to it. Warren Ellis did, for better or for worse, did add a lot of depth to this book, a lot of characters, added a lot of the political intrigue and drama and such. So I think he did improve the book creatively, but he did not improve the book sales wise. The sales of Stormwatch did not even budge when Warren Ellis was the writer. In fact, he's even since said the only reason they kept that book running is because the guys in the Wildstorm office liked Warren Ellis and wanted to keep him working and liked reading the book, but everyone knew it wasn't selling and didn't matter. And that is why ultimately they did wrap up the first Stormwatch run with issue 50. But Warren Ellis, he wanted to do something better. He wanted to do something that did sell, that did actually have staying power, because he wasn't satisfied to just be a charity case. You know, he didn't want to just be kept on because the guys in the office like reading the book. He wanted to make a book that other people would want to read. And I think to do that, they had to shed the Stormwatch. They had to shed the whole thing, and they had to launch it from anew. So that is the behind the scenes origin of the Authority book. Around the same time, I believe it was January of 99, the deal was finalized. This is around when DC Comics purchased Wildstorm from Jim Lee. So this Authority book, you know, it's technically under like Wildstorm Productions because it was still owned by DC. But if you look on the cover, there's no hint of Wildstorm. It just says DC. So this is the Authority under DC Comics, which is funny because I was reading this book. I don't know if I just didn't know, you know, the behind the scenes, but I was reading this book, you know, this was like the last book that I was still reading. It was this and Savage Dragon when I stopped reading comics around like 2002 or so. So I was reading the Authority and Savage Dragon. I honestly think those are the only two books I was regularly picking up. I can't remember that this was from DC. Like, I don't have any recollection of it. I just didn't care, but it never felt like a DC book. You know what I mean? It still felt like an Image book, but technically with this launch, Authority number one, this was a DC Comics book. So before we dive in, Remzo, what's your thoughts on the Authority prior to this? Had you read this run before I shoveled it down your gullet?
No, really, my only exposure to the Authority has been through television. There was somebody.
Authority TV show?
Well, no, they had some of the characters pop in and out of Smallville, and recently, somebody popped in and out of. I think Manchester Black was in a few seasons of Supergirl.
Manchester Black is an Authority parody. Create not parody, but maybe homage. Manchester Black was created by Grant Morrison, and it was supposed to be a take on the Authority. But Manchester Black is not part of the Authority. I mean, he's a part of Superman and the Authority, so that might be why that's a little confusing.
I think that's why, because I also know that you and a bunch of our listeners really liked that book, and that's why they're currently reading the current run of Action Comics, because it basically continued that.
I'm waiting for that to get on Hoopla, and then I will read it as well.
Yeah, I think it was that, and then there was the Superman and the Authority animated film that was okay, but I think I don't think I ever read any of them before this.
Well, that's why we have this podcast, Remzo, to get us reading the stuff that we may have never gotten around to reading. And we are now going to get around to reading the Authority number one. But first, I almost forgot to take care of the business, and that business, I don't know why I just got some weird old like Southern business here. You hear now, you see this business we're going to be taking care of. The business is, don't forget to follow us anywhere and everywhere at Second Print Pod. You can find us on Twitter @Second Print Pod. You can find us on Instagram @Second Print Pod. And you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/secondprintpod, where you get all sorts of bonus content. You get early access to every single episode. You get shows like What Mark Missed, where I am currently valiantly, bravely going through the toughest part of the Ultimate Fantastic Four run. Let's just say my pace has slowed down a little bit as my enthusiasm has slowed down. You can also get the Moon Knight recaps from Renzo and a friend, Derek Franz. And pretty soon, it's getting closer every day.
You combine Caleb Franz and Derek Gordon.
Did I say Derek Franz? I
just said Derek Franz. Caleb Franz, right. They're a super person now.
They're pretty much one person,
basically.
Be honest. Get all that stuff over on Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod. You can even at higher levels produce episodes of the show, get on monthly calls with Mark and Remzo. Why am I in the third person? With Remzo and I, etc.
We are all Mark
so
and
so
Remzo.
Yes, we are Mark and Remzo.
But we should start a cult.
Now that's what we have. What are podcasts if not glorified cults? Let's be honest.
Essentially.
Yeah, cults with audio editing, basically, is what podcasts are. We move into now The Authority. This is a story called Full Circle, a nice, clean 4 issues. Thank you very much, Mr. Ellis, for keeping this one tight. But again, this is Warren Ellis and artist Brian Hitch. What are your thoughts on Brian Hitch? Because I did enjoy his art on Stormwatch, and I think I've usually enjoyed Brian Hitch art. Never enjoyed Brian Hitch, the writer.
So My peak Brian Hitch is when he was with Mark Millar over on the Ultimates. I think he's kind of gotten into a weird position because starting out, and I like his artwork, I really did not like his stuff on the previous Stormwatch book that we covered. But that's only because that was when he started drawing and he hadn't really worked it into his own style yet. And I don't want to spoil anything, but it's kind of similar here, only because of the proximity and time and stuff like that. Whereas him in like the mid 2000s, he was an all-star. He did get kind of, I will say, I'm not going to say sloppy, but over the past 4 or 5 years, I'll say that the quality of his stuff has just not been up to par. And this is like super in the weeds shit, so I apologize for getting into the minutia. But when the Infinite Frontier limited series came out and he put out a alternate cover with Superman, Calvin Ellis, he gave him like this giant receding hairline, and he also messed up the distance in his eyes. So people were making fun of him, basically saying that you have an old baby or an extremely young grandpa, like a prematurely aged black Superman, where you can't tell whether he's Barack Obama or Uncle Ben from the rice box. And what made it worse was that a lot of people from DC were like, well, you know, we had to rush it out and Brian was put in a rough position. So basically that was their polite way of saying, yeah, it's not good. And then Brian Hitch got really mad and he started calling people out and getting into fights with people, and he blocked a bunch of people. And long story short, it's still kind of a downward spiral. So it's a weird relationship I have with this stuff. I love some of his stuff, but some of his other stuff before his Ultimates run and after that is just kind of scattered in quality. That's probably more than what you wanted, but it's what you're getting.
Well, it remains to be seen how you will judge this iteration of Brian Hitch. So stay tuned to the end of this episode where we'll find out. But we go into Authority number one. We start with a big page where we just see the Earth, the old Earth, with a caption saying, they think there's no one left to save the world. So just to recap, for those of you who have not gone back, but you should pause right now and go take the 2 hours and 13 minutes to listen to episode 25. And then you'll kind of be caught up to where we are with these characters. But basically, Stormwatch was the UN-sponsored, basically, Watchers of Earth, run by this madman Henry Bendix. In that last episode, damn it, I did it. It's been so long.
You did so well.
In that last issue, Stormwatch number 50, a bunch of crazy shit happened. A bunch of characters died. Henry Bendix died. And Stormwatch was effectively shut down. It no longer exists as we head into the Authority number one here. So we start off in Moscow. This little old Russian lady is walking along, and we see these lights streaks in the sky. Suddenly, the next page, boom, huge explosion. We see buildings blowing up. We see laser beams everywhere. And these dudes, who all have the same circle with three, they're just these dudes all in black. They all look exactly the same. And they're all just shooting lasers from their eyes and destroying everything, burning people alive, just causing absolute mayhem and destruction, completely destroying the city of Moscow without any dialogue on these two pages. Before I get into the story, what did you think of this start where not a single word is uttered? We just see Moscow destroyed by these like Asian Supermen, basically, and then we move on.
It certainly gives you that feeling where it's like, what the hell did I just see? So it caught my attention pretty immediately. It's like starting a movie immediately with like 9/11. No context. It's like, oh, this is where we're at. Okay.
Oh, it's nice we can laugh. I'm not laughing about 9/11. I'm laughing at the joke. Anyway, moving along, we head to New York City, where we see our old friends from the old store watch, Christine Trelane and what's his damn name? Jackson. Yeah, Jackson Hyde. Jackson Hyde and Christine Trelane, who are already not, they are superheroes, but they were already acting in a sort of a managerial role last we saw them in Stormwatch. And now they are basically reduced to working desk jobs at the UN. And they're talking about what went on. They're like, man, we don't even have a Stormwatch now. Like, these guys just destroyed Moscow. This seems like a problem. What the fuck are we going to do? He's just like, Jackson Hyde is saying there's no one left to stop them. Even Jenny Spark and the Stormwatch Black team. So Jenny Sparks, all of Stormwatch Black survived the destruction of Stormwatch 50 because Jenny Sparks, Jack Hawksmoor, and I think Swift were part of Stormwatch Black. They were the team that wasn't supposed to exist. They were like the Black Ops covert team. So they all made it out of this thing alive. I believe Midnighter and Apollo might have been a part of that team as well. So yeah, all those guys survived. It was basically the newer characters survived, and all the old ones, most of the old ones that were carryovers from the original Image Stormwatch, those are the ones that died. So none of that was coincidental at all. So yeah, they're talking about all this stuff, and before they know it, see a little zap. In appears the spirit of the 20th century herself, Jenny Sparks. Remso, are you a fan of Jenny Sparks? I've just always loved this character for whatever reason.
I think I said she was cool. Yeah,
she's cool.
I dig her. Yeah. She had a cool origin story.
Wears a British t-shirt and a white, pantsuit. She's looking spiffy.
She doesn't need to tell anyone that she's cool. She's just kind of she's got that attitude.
She's got that vibe, exactly. The chick appears out of electricity sockets, and she's usually, it doesn't look like she is here. She usually pops out smoking a cigarette, so she always looks pretty damn cool. And she doesn't really say anything. She just says, we were somewhere else when they hit Moscow. It won't happen again. Tell me everything you know. So some of these characters are still around, still watching over things, but unfortunately they couldn't really help in Moscow. We then go to a place called Gamora Island. I'm going to guess you don't remember Gamora Island because this is a deep cut. You'd have to go to the beginning of that episode, that Stormwatch episode. But in that series, Warren Ellis had an issue where, like, basically the theme of that series was that Henry Bendix was really being heavy-handed, and like a lot of the stuff he was doing as leader of Stormwatch was extremely morally questionable. And one thing he did was have the members of Stormwatch, in retaliation to a terrorist attack by this guy Kazan Gamora, he had the members of Stormwatch go to Gamora Island and cause and create a massacre. I mean, they murdered 200 Gamoran civilians. This happened in the pages of the Stormwatch book by Warren Ellis. So now we are circling back to that. We are on Gamora Island, and we see this guy, Kaizen Gamora, who he basically looks like Fu Manchu. I think that's all we really need to say. He's the stereotypical Asian villain. He has the mustache, has the eyes.
It's problematic.
Yes, he's very problematic.
He's so problematic.
And he is just giving a little soliloquy here. He's saying, 70 years ago, the brothers Gamora were born.
You have to do it in the stereotype voice.
No, I come on. I don't want to do that.
We did the gongs for Lady Shiva. We need to double down for that internet clout.
Should I do gongs for Cazin Gamora? 70 years ago, the brothers Gamora were born into Perugia. By the age of 10, the brothers Gamora ran... how quickly I could be turned racist. ran their village. By 16, they ran the country. By 18, they had remade Perugia as an island factory for terror. And by 20, I had killed my brothers, Sum and Y. But I remember and I honor them by retaining the symbol we used in the old days. The circle with three knots. In the old days, it was a thin leather bracelet that served as a symbol worn to identify the creatures of the brothers Gamora. Today it is a smooth corporate logo. The meaning is the same. Anything marked with the Gamora circle belongs to the clan Gamora, and I am not going to continue trying to do this accent because it's hurting my throat. But
this is basically where they got the idea of the Mandarin in Iron Man 3.
That's almost exactly what this is, yeah. Down to everything, including my bad impression. But yeah, basically what he wants to do is he's taking this symbol, and this symbol, it's these three dots in a circle, and the symbol, whatever is on this symbol, you know, according to this Gamora guy, you own, is a symbol that is owned by the Gamora clan. So what he's trying to do here is he is trying to own the Earth by putting this symbol on the Earth, and the three dots are three major cities. So we, the reader, knows this. You know, the authority has to figure that out. But
man,
that's basically
is so problematic.
This is very problematic. And yeah, and we see him surrounded by all these same guys that we saw before, these black suited fellas. They look like the suit that Superman wore when he came back. The black
regeneration suit.
The regeneration suit. Yeah, they're wearing regeneration suits, only with this circle and dot symbol instead of the Superman symbol. And basically, this is a very classic villain in the sense that he has no origin like that you could ever sympathize with. Like, it's not like
he's a foreigner, so we know that he's evil.
he's just evil because he's not from this country. Yeah, but I mean, you know, we did our favorite villains episode, and like, at least for me, my favorite villains are ones that they're only a villain because, you know, because of who they're against. But like, you know, you could make the argument, you could be sympathetic to them, like a Magneto, like a Dr. Doom, a robot even. But this is not that kind of villain. This is a villain who is purely evil, and he doesn't commit terrorist acts because he has some goal or he has some demand. No, he commits terrorism. He commits terrorist acts. He commits terrorism because that's the reward. The reward is the terror. He is just a villain, straight up.
Man, George Bush would love this guy.
Guys in Gamora, you are either with us or you are against us. And we go back to New York, where Jenny is chatting with Christine and Jackson Hyde. And this is basically picking up right where we were before. Christine is like, Jenny Sparks, what is all this? How did you get here? She's like, I'm fucking Jenny Sparks, bitch. I travel through electricity. You know how I get here. But she basically says, yeah, Stormwatch may be gone, but there... She's British, too. I don't have to do a British... Stormwatch may be gone, but there is a...
Stop. We've already lost half the audience.
We've already lost the Asians, and now we're going to lose the Brits. Is half our audience Asian? Not anymore. But I can't do British. Every time I try, it's Australian.
The quarter Asian part of me is very offended.
I hope so. But there is still a way to stop these bastards before it's too late for everyone. But you'll have to give me your intel on this. So she's basically going to these guys that she's old friends with for help on this. And Jackson's like, who's going to stop them, Jenny? What have you been up to here? She says, well, friends. I've got friends. You know, when you put me and the rest of Stormwatch Black team into hiding, we decided not to be idle. Me, Jack Hawksmoor, Shen Li Min, who is Swift, we started talking to people. Now, are you going to give me all your intel on the Moscow incident or not? So they do. They're like, yeah, whatever. And she just says the word door. And Jackson's like, who's going to stop them, Jenny? And she says, a higher authority, as she walks through this door. And we go right to the next scene where she is walking out through that door, which seemingly teleported to her to this place, the carrier. She is in the carrier junction room, where she meets up with our old friend, Jack Hawksmoor. Jack Hawksmoor. What do you remember about Jack Hawksmoor? Anyway, anything? He doesn't wear shoes. I can tell you that.
He can phase through stuff.
Can he? I don't know.
I don't think so. I think it's somebody else.
But Jack Hawksmoor is a pretty unique character. He feeds on cities. Like, he feels the city. Like, his power comes from cities and comes from being around like a lot of people, and if he's away from a city, he loses his powers. So just an interesting
I don't remember shit about this guy.
Yeah, he wears a trench coat and doesn't wear shoes. That's Jack Hawksmoor. Swift is a former Tibetan monk who has wings and flies around, and Jenny is Jenny. So they are there in the carrier. And Jenny's just basically laying out what they're doing here. She's like, you know, how did it go with them? Hawksmoor's like, how did it go? And she's like, well, as expected, but I got the information we needed. And Swift is like, well, we didn't really need it, Jenny, not with the engineer and the doctor. Now, there was an engineer and a doctor in the old Stormwatch. We'll meet them in a bit. These are not the same engineers and doctors. Jenny Spark says, we needed Christine and Jackson to believe we needed them, because when all bloody hell breaks loose, and it's going to, we will need them. So she's like, I don't need them now for this thing we're going to do. We can deal with these Superman clone guys, this Kaizen Gamora, this problematic villain. We can deal with that. But someday,
so
we're going to
need them. So,
yeah, so let's build the bridge now, basically. And then we go back to... She sends Hawksmoor off to do a little intel on in Moscow, and Hawksmoor gets to Moscow, and they all teleport through. They just say door, and this carrier thing opens a door, and they go where the fuck they want. So it's quite convenient. And Hawksmoor sees this symbol on the wreckage, and it's that same symbol that we've seen. It's the three dots in the circle, and Hawksmoor's like, oh, this is their mark, isn't it? The people who did this. And he can feel this thing, and he says, I haven't seen residual radiation like that since the days of writing Stormwatch transfer phase, the good old days, the original Warren Ellis run. We then go and we see Jenny Sparks, who is talking to our new engineer, our brand new engineer, who goes by the name of Angela Spica. And basically the summary with her is the old engineer, when he died, his like last act was to send this engineer, this other person, Angela Spica, all his information about this nanotechnology and what have you, and she just downloaded that shit, absorbed it into her body, and now she has powers and she has nano metal blood, and that is the short origin of the engineer here.
That's hot.
We then also meet this new doctor who is called the Shaman. And so what we learn here too is that the Earth always has a doctor. A doctor is like a title that is always passed down. So this, we do actually see him meeting with the other doctor that we knew from the Stormwatch, the previous Stormwatch series. This is kind of like the ancestral plane in Wakanda. You know, he's meeting, this is basically Black Panther, but, you know, so he's talking to the last version of the doctor that is basically the Earth shaman, there to protect the Earth from all sorts of extra dimensional, spiritual, demonic type stuff, basically. Those are basically the replacement characters for the dead engineer and the dead doctor. It's new shaman, this guy with these rose colored glasses, former junkie. Former, maybe current junkie. He looks pretty stoned in this. And the new engineer, Angela Spica. Did you ever read? I'm curious. Did you ever read? Maybe it was like 3 or 4 years ago, even that they, Warren Ellis, they actually brought him in to do to launch. It was supposed to be a new Wildstorm line. But I think all they ever had was they had a book called The Wildstorm that lasted 24 issues, which I really did enjoy. There was one spinoff, like the Michael Cray spinoff, and then that just ended. But I really enjoyed it. I was ready to like make this my line because I was digging that one. Did you ever catch a sniff of that one?
You know, it's so weird. I remember seeing a few blogs about it through comicbookresources.com, and I saw it on the stands. DC did very little promo for it. It's like they you know, they let people know it was out, but they didn't really want to promote it. And you see that in comic lines where it's like they're like contractually obligated to put out the books, but then the PR team does as little as possible to actually promote them.
Interesting. Well, that ended up going nowhere, but I did really enjoy that book, The Wildstorm. Anyway,
kind of like Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Oh, that's so much better than... Well, depends on which... Don't get me there now. To learn my thoughts about Ultimate Fantastic Four, patreon.com/secondprintpod. But Angela Spica, that version of the engineer, is a pretty prominent character in that version. Basically brings all these characters back, but they're totally new, totally new characters. We then see a couple other familiar faces. Apollo and the Midnighter. I'm going to let you take this one, Remzo. You can do this. What can you tell me about Apollo and the Midnighter?
They're my favorite gay couple.
In real life and fictionally. Yeah, basically they're gay Batman and Superman. That's who they are.
Honestly, they're so cool.
They're so awesome.
They're so cool.
They're really cool. These are two dudes that like they go off and do cool ass shit and they come home. These guys ain't cuddling. They're giving it hard. They are. This is not
Dark Knights, Man of Steel.
Definitely my favorite gay fictional couple. I'd have to think further. I don't want to insult gay couples I know in real life, but you know, these guys are badass.
I'm just going to put it this way. Years later, when Apollo is viciously sexually assaulted, What Midnighter did to the man who did that to him has gone down as one of the most violent scenes in all of comic book history. And it was so fucking awesome.
What book did that appear in? So here's what's like always confusing about these Wildstorm characters now when it comes to DC Comics. DC owns them so they can do whatever they want with them. It's like sometimes they have their own line. Like this started off as their own line. But then sometimes they're like, oh, we own these characters. Let's make them part of DC. And I think when they redid, when the New 52 came out, they had a new Stormwatch series that had some of these characters.
Forget that series ever existed, because I did collect that. And after
also had Martian Manhunter in it.
Yeah, it was bad. Like it's in no one's continuity. It's barely recognized in New 52 continuity. But Apollo and Midnighter, they never. I don't think they've had a titled together, but a majority of their stories took place in like the Authority or their comics. I think it's this Authority run where we're gonna have the infamous scene where Apollo is depowered and kidnapped and, you know, victimized that way, and Midnighter finds out, and Midnighter does some like shit that the Punisher wouldn't even do.
I do kind of recall this. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely not in the issues we're looking at today, but you know, this, by the way, the Authority goes on forever. Like there, this is actually just a 12 issue run by Warren Ellis, but we get a Mark Millar run. We get a Grant Morrison run. I think there are four volumes of the Authority. So they kept bringing this book back. So I imagine it was selling decently because they always,
this was one of the first really mature lines to come out from one of the big two. Mm-hmm.
Indeedy. But anyway, Apollo and Midnighter, our favorite badass couple, are walking through the halls of the carrier, and Midnighter's basically just saying, you know, we can't deal with things on this scale. For God's sake, we spent 5 years working the alleyways of America. We go from that to this. To hell with this. And Jenny Sparks, we should never have listened. Never brought Apollo and the Midnighter out of retirement. And Apollo says, retirement my ass. We are Apollo and the Midnighter. And if this, his ass is right. And if this seems big, well, then we just have to grow up. So, a couple bickering in their own way. We then get like a huge splash page where we finally get to see the carrier, and the carrier is massive. It is this moving, the carrier is moving downward through the Davakianic realm at a speed of 25 dreams per second. That is nice. a speed I have never heard before. 25 dreams per second. And this is basically this like interdimensional spaceship thing, and they'll talk about it more going on. It's a really weird thing, but essentially this thing operates towards the edge of the bleed, and the bleed is a concept that is still exists in the DC universe. The bleed is basically the wall that separates various different dimensions and alternate realities and what have you. So these guys could basically go fucking anywhere. I think this is actually touched on in, I think there was part of that Warren Ellis run we looked at where they had to battle this alternate reality Earth, and then they went through the bleed thing, blah, 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 whatever. Time passes on, and we go back to the carrier's mission control room, where Angela Spica is basically just analyzing some data here, as engineers often do. And they're talking about how Jack saw the residue of the teleportation effect in Moscow. So this carrier is able to sense that same radiation about when it's about to appear, essentially. So they figure out that there's about to be another teleportation thing opening above London. So they don't quite get there in time, but they realize something's going on. The same thing is going down in London. So we head over to London. Sure enough, these same motherfuckers. There is just so much destruction here. We see Big Ben, good old Big Ben, not the football player, the tower goes down, gets destroyed. And here come these Asian Superman dot circle guys just destroying everyone, killing everyone with lasers. But this time, this time they face a little resistance, because in flies motherfucking Apollo. He rages in there and starts kicking some Superman-esque ass of his own. Apollo, the Sun King, and we're sort of being reintroduced to our characters here. The Midnighter, Nightsbringer of War. I really like these nicknames. The Engineer, the Maker. That's kind of a lame one. The Doctor, the Shaman. Jack Hawksmoor, the God of the Cities. And as we see Jack Hawksmoor, he's literally punching one of these guys' faces off, and his eye is exploding from his face as his jaw falls apart. This panel is crazy. Swift, the Winged Huntress. And of course, our leader, Jenny Sparks, the spirit of the 21st century. They kick a ton of ass, and Jenny just says, game over, as we finish the first issue with a splash page of this new, brand new Authority. Ramzo, what do you think of the Authority? What do you think of them, more importantly, compared to the Stormwatch team?
I like the lineup a lot more. I think you've got enough differences to make them all stand out, but they all kind of complement each other in a different way. Just the whole way the issue was done. Like, I don't remember really liking how the other one was introduced, but this this intro is a first issue. Like, it's really good. I dig it.
Yeah, so we head into issue two, and you know, they kick some ass, but there's still like a billion of these fucking, you know, Superman clone guys fighting around, so they got to get back into battle. They get a little comm link by, so basically Angela Spica sends this little nano insect into each of their heads, and now they can all talk to each other. So that's very convenient. And they go off, and we get some more battle. These guys are just kicking ass as much as they can. We're getting displays of all their various powers. The shaman is doing some shamanic shit.
Apollo
and Midnighter. Shaman. And we see the Midnighter kicking ass. Midnighter's, I think, my favorite character in this whole thing. And Midnighter just takes out like a bunch of these guys, and he's like,
"The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Your move, Apollo. What do you got? And then Apollo's like, "Well, I'm so rusty after a whole 6 months off the street that I need reminding." Shut up! You whine like an old woman. Midnighter. So they're just bickering here as Apollo to show off here, I guess, to his husband, calling him out, or boyfriend. I'm not sure their legal status, but he just he just rips an entire part of the city off, and all these guys fall into the river and fucking die. And then this is all part of the plan, I guess, because Hawksmoor yells, "They're in the river, Jenny." So what does Jenny do? The spirit of the 21st century, the master of electricity, she electrocutes all of these motherfuckers in the, I don't know if it's called the London River, whatever that river in London called. Someone that's smarter can tell us. Yeah, is it the River Thames? Maybe. First of all, it's pronounced Thames. At least I know that. At least I don't know that if this is that river that I know how to pronounce.
There's a unique body of water there. I'm sorry I couldn't remember that.
There's a fun scene there. They seem to have killed most of them. And Jenny's like, you know, get around the city, start mopping up. And Midnighter comes upon this guy who's one of those guys who's still alive, holding a small child. Midnighter just casually, I love this scene so much. Midnighter just says, "Put the child down." And the guy's like, "Nope, I leave alone or it dies." And Midnighter says, "Let me make the situation clear for you." This is kind of like Midnighter's speech he gives everyone. He says, "I know what it's basically his Liam Neeson in Taken. "I know what special abilities you have. I can see the enhancements. I can detect the increased electrical activity in your brain. I know what moves you're preparing to make. I've fought our fight already in my head in a million different ways. I can hit you without you even seeing me. I'm what soldiers dream of growing into. I'm what children see when they first imagine what death is like. I'm the Midnighter. Put the child down." And you can see this guy is like, now he's about to go kill this child. Before you know it, you just see like a swoosh of air, and we see Midnighter holding the child, and Midnighter says, "Told you so." And this guy's just dead. He just snapped his neck in that quick. Midnighter is awesome. So Midnighter is basically, he's like Batman if Batman was a machine. Literally, he's programmed, and you know, him and Apollo were basically both created, genetically engineered by Henry Bendix to be utilized by the previous version of Stormwatch. And his power is that he knows everything, and he can calculate. He can look at someone, he can see everything, he can know all their powers, and he can know how their brain works, and he can anticipate their every move. So he basically cannot be defeated, at least by anything that he is remotely in a similar power level to. Hawksmoor's calling out. He's like, "Hawksmoor to anyone. I'm being shot at by some son of a bitch 400 feet above my head, so some of these guys are still coming. If I don't see some air support right now, I'm going to come back from the dead specifically to tell Jenny on you." And good old Apollo comes in, helps save Jack. Hawksmoor kills another one of these guys and rips his shirt off. And when he rips his black Superman regeneration suit off, the guy says, "You tore my teleport netting." And Apollo's like, "That's not all. I'm going to tear it off. Where do you think you're going?" The guy flies away. And Jenny's like, "Oh, hell." And they're like, you know, should we go follow this guy? And they're like, no, no, we don't want to follow him. But before she can say even say anything, Apollo's gone. Apollo just flies away and chases this guy. And she says, door! So emergency, they go into the carrier. And as they go through the door, the storm, like some of these like guys are falling through the carrier.
So awesome.
Actually, they're falling into the play. Okay, yeah, they're being teleported back to Kaizen Gamora, where Kaizen Gamora just comes in and he's basically giving a speech over the loudspeaker to everyone. He's saying, "All medical teams to the injection field. Repeat, all medical teams to the injection field. We have wounded teleporting in. Crash team to injection field. Entrance 9. Morgue unit to injection." I feel like I'm doing Splinter from TMNT.
So problematic.
"No one is to panic. No one is to be afraid. Gamora is strong. Kaizen Gamora loves all." Last time I'm doing that voice. It hurts my throat too much.
Because it's so problematic. But
as soon as he finishes this speech where he says, "Gamora loves all," he says, "I love no one." As soon as he turns off the thing, he's like, "Yeah, I love no one." He's like, "There should have been no one to interrupt this London operation. There is no one who operates on my scale. I must protect my people while I consider." Draw the curtains over Gamora Island. And we see this force field basically come over Gamora Island as the rest of the authority is going after Apollo here. And it's kind of cute. You know, all the flying people are helping someone out. So engineer is carrying Jenny Sparks, although can't she just fly in the electricity of the air or something? Whatever.
Science.
Swift is carrying Hawksmoor, who can fly sometimes, but maybe not over the ocean because he's powered by the city. So that I'll buy. And I'm not sure which of the Shaman Midnighter is the one flying, but they're holding hands and flying through the air. So whatever.
Everyone can fly now.
But yeah, they're putting up this shield as Apollo is flying full speed at this thing. And as Apollo is flying after this guy, he just starts to disappear. And you're like, what the fuck? And then he reappears and he is like basically in this place with all this like green and liquid or something. And we see a voice from off screen, if this were a movie, off panel, saying, "There wasn't another way to save your life. You were headed towards something harder than you are, and at too high of a speed to be stopped. We're in a broken universe somewhere off the bleed. The kinetic energy of anything traveling over 100 miles an hour here gets converted into music." So I guess Apollo turns into music, and it is just the doctor. So this doctor, the shaman, he did some dimensional shit and pulled Apollo into this weird area that exists, this interdimensional zone that exists between the bleed to prevent him from going headfirst into this shield and killing him. So that was very nice. Nice move from the shaman there. He's like, and Apollo's like, "Thanks, dude. Well, are you gonna send us back now that we saved me from that?" He's like, "Yeah, sure." So they disappear right outside of the bubble protecting Gamora Island here. What do you think of the scene? I really enjoyed it.
I like it. You know, it's stuff like this where it's like sometimes it's just so ridiculous. It's awesome. And you can't say anything otherwise.
Yeah. And Jenny's like, "Welcome back. But, you know, next time, wait for the fucking order, bitch. Wait for the order, Apollo. This proves why you're supposed to listen to Jenny, your reluctant leader." Eventually, they say, "All right, well, we're done here. Let's go back." They go back to the carrier. And, you know, Jack and Jenny have a little talk about. Oh, no, that's not Jack and Jenny. Jack and Angela. Speaker have a little talk about, you know, hey, what's it like being a superhero kind of stuff. She's like, "Well, it's pretty crazy." But and she's like, "Did Jenny Sparks always shout at everyone like that?" He's like, "Well, not on that scale. We're pretty close. But the more responsibility she gets, the louder and more horrible she becomes. She's had a weird life. I tend to forgive her a lot for that." We then go see a little conversation between Jenny Sparks and Apollo, and Jenny is just getting off the phone with Christine Trelane. So she still is keeping these contacts with her former Stormwatch teammates who are now part of the UN. And I hate to say it to the one reviewer, we are going to get political a little bit later in the show, by the way. And Jenny is saying, "Phew, we're going to be clear with the Russians in about 10 minutes time." And Apollo's like, "You are deeply, I don't know why I think he's Russian. He's not Russian. You're deeply uncomfortable with leadership, aren't you? You're deeply uncomfortable with leadership, aren't you?" She's like, "Well, no, I don't like it. No." And he's like, "Well, interesting. Yeah, you know, you part convinced, part coerced me into joining what sounded like the wet brain fantasy of an alcoholic burnout. case. He's like, then you obtained the engineer whose existence had barely even been rumored to that date, and I still don't know how you located the doctor, whom, if I understand his ranting, is a magician on a planetary scale. For someone who doesn't like leadership, you have a knack for building armies, Jenny. And she says, well, what can I say? When I see an unemployed, majestic-class superhuman with full combat training from Henry Bendix, ideas occur to me. But I know it does express some doubt. She's like, you know, this is all a hellish gamble for me, Apollo, but there had to be someone left to save the world. Basically, you know, the governments of the world gave up. You know, the Stormwatch is gone. So Jenny had to step up, and she is the spirit of the 21st century. And she says, and someone left to change it, that being her and the Authority. As we wrap up issue two, what are you thinking?
Why couldn't the original Stormwatch be like this? I feel like there was a lot in there I probably would have liked, but now this new Authority run has just really distilled the good parts. I'm really liking this a lot more.
Yeah, it's a lot less convoluted, a lot more direct and to the point. And I think this is the book that Warren Ellis really wanted to do in many ways. But because, you know, elements of this were in the other other Stormwatch. But you could tell he was still kind of hampered by having that Stormwatch brand, that you know, that same book that was just kind of a very standard, very straightforward image type book before. So I think shedding that old title, shedding those old characters, really reinvigorated him and reinvigorated his creativity and such. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah, I could see that a lot more here.
So now we go and see we are in London, seeing it's kind of the aftermath there as Swift and the Doctor are there. And you know, Swift is saying sometimes it's just not a good enough world that you can work for it without hurting people badly. You know, basically saying like, because they're saying like, look what happened here. Like, you know, she's saying she used to be a pacifist. They're like, well, you know, and she realized like sometimes you just got to hurt people because there's a ton of people hurt here. I mean, like hundreds of people are dead and hurt, but you know, they did save the day, but they had to crack a few eggs, crack a few heads to get it done. So you know, she is not a pacifist anymore. She is no longer a monk. She is a winged warrior instead. And she does hear something as her and the Doctor are investigating what they're hearing. And he says, well, bugger me, they find a couple people. So Jenny was able to use her, I guess she has some super hearing or something. They found a couple people buried and saved them. And moving along, we go back to the carrier tacking into the bleed, superposed channel between alternate universes. Yeah, that's where this carrier lives. It's a weird thing, this carrier, and we don't really find out all about it in this, but we will learn more about it. Like they say, they think it's alive, but they're not sure. All seems kind of weird, but we go back and Apollo and Jenny are still talking, and you know, Apollo's like, look, this brings me back to Gamora Island. He's like, and she's like, will you just shut up about Gamora Island, you moaning punch? What a word, punch. And Apollo's like, well, what are we gonna do about that force field around it? He wants to go in there and kick some ass. Like Apollo is rapidly wanting to go back and destroy Gamora Island again. And Swift's like, is he still going on about this with the force field thing? She's like, yeah, it's like working with me. She says, it's like working with me, bleeding mum or something. And then we hear a call. Jenny, this is Jack. Angie and I are in the map room. Come and find us. They go down, and this is where basically Angela and Jack Hawksmoor have figured this whole thing out. They have figured out that when they put those two dots together and lay it over the Earth, it does create the beginnings of this image, this circle with the three dots, and they see that the third dot is right over Los Angeles. So they now know that Los Angeles is the next target for Kaizen Gamora. Thank God I got out of there before all this went down. And Kaizen Gamora is watching all these superheroes, and he's basically just he's like, who are these? Who the fuck are these people? Like, they're all superhuman. Where did they come from? I know the one, Jennifer Sparks, the English woman, a creature of electricity, almost a century old, most recently leader of the Stormwatch covert warfare team. And this one idiot is like, but Stormwatch no longer exists, boss. Why is she doing, what's she doing over Gamora? And he's like, that's the American Jack Hawksmoor. And Shenli Min of Tibet, also leader of Stormwatch. I don't know the others. They were in London. They are operating against us. I wonder why. Got a video call from New York, and you know, he's getting a little Zoom call here from the United Nations, including their emissaries, our friends Jackson Hyde and Christine Trelane, and they're basically like, dude, what do you want, Kaizen Gamora? What's your deal? Why are you causing all this terrorism? And he just laughs. He's like, ha ha ha, ha. I am Kaizen Gamora, father and fine. I said I wasn't gonna do it, but
you can, you can
me.
Stop. You like, really, you gave a valiant effort. And now
I'm kind of into it.
It's just so problematic.
Okay, now I'm into it. Ha ha ha! I am Kaizen Gamora, father and final brother of the clan Gamora, ruling family of Gamora Island. What do you think I need? Ha 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 ha! 2 years ago, Stormwatch did me a great unkindness. In retaliation for an act of business perpetrated upon the British Isles, hundreds of my people were murdered. I've spent 2 years building the world's reward for daring to harm Gamora. First Moscow, then London, and then ha 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 ha. And they're like, act of business, you were a terrorist, that was terrorism. And they responded to terrorism. They're like, well, yeah, but you responded to terrorism with terrorism, so how are you any better than me? And frankly, he kind of has a point. But yeah, Gamora says, yes, it was an act of terrorism. Gamora is built on terrorism. And the UN guy's like, why? He says, because I can. Because I am a wolf in a world of sheep. Because terror is the blood of life and its guiding principle. I have no politics, and this is crazy, I have no politics to espouse through my terror, no ideals to force through. And as he does this, he waves for this, like, you know, geisha woman to come over. And as he's talking, he slowly, with his big sharp nail, carves this same symbol in her face with the three dots in the circle as he says, terror is its own reward. Your missiles and bombers mean nothing to me. My terror has shown you that Gamora is the one true superpower on Earth. That's why, as he completes this, slicing this woman's face off, basically, who doesn't move, doesn't react, doesn't respond, he says, I am not finished. My mark is not yet cut. When it is, then you shall all know that I own the planet. What a fucking bastard this guy is. Jeez. I mean, hard to battle an enemy that you can't negotiate with, because he has no goal other than to destroy the stuff. So we head on, we go back to the carrier. And the carrier, again, this one is, they always describe the carrier and what it's doing. It says, sailing the outer oceans of idea space during the spawning season, keeping pace with the school of obsession fish. So there's like a very, like, Neil Gaiman-y aspect too to some of this stuff. Like, this carrier lives in this sort of interdimensional area where there's things like obsession fish, and you calculate time in terms of dreams. It's just, it's weird and wild stuff. And we go, and they're having a little board meeting, and Jenny's like, all right, we need to be in Los Angeles. We need to know what the hell Gamora is up to. More to the point, if we can stop him attacking LA in the first place, well, that would probably be a good thing. And she says, Jack's probably the best suited to what I'm thinking, but I need him in LA just in case. So Midnighter, you're going in. So Midnighter is being sent to Gamora past their force field. They're going to use that teleportation door to try to get him in there undetected, basically. So that is the plan. That's at least part of the plan that we know about. And she basically says, yeah, if you need help, shout, you know, the comms should go through the force field, right, Angie? And she's like, yeah, it should be routed through the carrier via Nanodor, yes. And Jenny says, see, Angie does have a proper name. Because the joke is like, what can I, earlier she was like, what can I call you guys? Like, I don't want to call you guys Midnighter and Apollo. They're like, no, that's our names. That's our actual names. We were created by Henry Bendix. He never gave us names like Steve and Joe or whatever. So you have to call us Midnighter and Apollo. So just a little joke there. And she's like, all right, let's do this thing. Let's get her done. And basically they head off on, I guess it's sort of their first official mission in a way. There's kind of a funny little scene here, which comes back later, where Angela's like, hey, Jenny, you got a cigarette there? Because, you know, Jenny never stops smoking. And she says, I've only got one. And Angie says, I only want one. And she just says, bitch, and gives her the cigarette. And then we go to Gamora Island. We see that Midnighter has, in fact, made it to Gamora. He attacks this first security guard that he sees. But of course, the super security guard is one of the super power guys, so the kick to the face doesn't do all that much. He says, I'm the police detachment from Kaizen Gamora's superhuman strike force, and I really don't think you're supposed to hit me. And then we then go and see that the rest of the gang is showing up in Los Angeles. And right as they're arriving, instead of saying, fuck me, because I guess you can't say that in DC Comics, Jenny says, stone me, as we get a huge splash page of all these hundreds of these fucking Asian regenerating black suit Superman guys coming down. And we end with Jenny saying, hundreds of the sods. Sods? Maybe it's supposed to say SOBs? I'm not sure. Maybe that was a typo. Or maybe sod is a word in England. And British fans, if you're still here, let me know. She says, Gamora must have kept, well, Christ, look at them, must have kept a battalion of the sods in reserve. And she says, I wish I had a cigarette. As we wrap up
this penultimate issue of this 4-issue run. How are you feeling going into the finale here, Remzo?
I'm liking everything I'm seeing so far.
Definitely a very different vibe than the previous Stormwatch. Less characters, more streamlined, more straightforward story, but still with the same kind of level of political intrigue, I guess you could say.
I want... And this is my criticism of Hickman. This is my criticism of Grant Morrison. Don't tell me how smart you are by making the reader feel dumb all the time. Write a good story.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think writers like Warren Ellis, not as much. I feel like Grant Morrison and a little bit of Scott Snyder and definitely a lot more of Neil Gaiman. Sometimes they just want you to feel like you're not as smart as them. Because they've made something so complicated. We're not getting that here, at least not at this point. We start issue 4 in Gamora as Midnighter is battling this security guy. He's like, identify yourself. How did you dodge my strike? You cannot be that fast. And we get another Midnighter speech, and I'm just going to read it because I love these every time. He says, oh, I can be that fast. And what's more, I know what you're going to do next. I've already played this fight in my head a million times from each and every angle. You think you're Kaizen Gamora's... pretty damn good. I know you think that, but my talents were built in by Henry Bendix, the biggest bastard on earth, and trained by 5 years living rough and fighting on the streets of America. I won this fight before you even turned up. Then this guy, his hands start glowing, he comes after him, and Midnighter just knees him in the gut, knees him in the face, and just fucking kills this guy. I don't know if he actually dies, but he fucked him up good, let's put it that way. And then he looks out and says, well, from here to there then, and looks up, and we see Gamora Tower, which is clearly marked by that same, this is, you know, instead of having contracts, instead of having to sign leases, you just put that symbol on things and it's yours. That's how Gamora property rights work. He's gonna head right to the source, right to the heart of Gamora Tower, where presumably all these guys are coming from. We then head and we see these guys, we head to Los Angeles, where we see these Black regenerative clone Superman guys coming down, ready to cause destruction. But luckily, the authority is already there, and we get to business. But first, the doctor. She says, Jenny's like, doctor, doctor? And he's like, he's there physically, but he's not really there. Where is he? He is in the astral plane, or whatever they call it here, the dream space, something like that. Who's he talking to? He's talking to the other doctor, the doctor that we saw die in the last Stormwatch series. Along, you can see all these images of like other doctors throughout the ages. So there's always a doctor, and he's saying, I'm not ready for this. Look, 2 months ago, I was a junkie. I wanted to be a shaman, but I was just a junkie with too many books. Like, I was just some guy doing DMT, man. I don't know. I can't do this. Look at those bastards coming down. And this other doctor, the old doctor, says, you are the doctor. You've got millennia of dealing with threats to your village encoded in you. Reach inside and take it. Doctor says, this is LA. This isn't my village. I wouldn't give you a rat's ass for LA. And other older astral doctor says, the shaman lives outside the village. This is 1999. The world is your tribe. You are the doctor. The means exist inside you. Reach inside and take it. And then we go back and Jenny's saying, doctor, doctor? And he's like, yeah, I'll do what I can. Which is, she thinks he's talking to him, and he's really talking to this other, you know, shamanic doctor. And we see this big blue flashing light as all these guys get fucked up by this doctor's energy thing, whatever he just does. She's like, and Jenny's like, bloody hell, is this your idea of sorting? And this is my Alan Moore impression, it snuck its way in here. Bloody hell, is this your idea of sorting magic? Sod must be British for fuck or fucker or whatever. I know, instead of having them beat Jenny to death, I'll turn them into 10,000 sharp, pointy things and bloody chuck them at her and say, oh yeah, so this magic turns these guys into like little sharp metal objects that are raining down upon them. So he did destroy them, but then these things come into the ground and they sprout into trees. And she's like, you turn them into trees? He's like, well, yeah, I had to do something with all that mass. So basically he can change mass, but he can't destroy it. So he just turns all of these destructive Supermen into trees. And then he says, I feel great. And he just passes out. And she's like, oh my God, the doctor's down. So basically he used like all of his energy to turn as many of these guys as he could into trees. Little display of the doctor's power, but that was not all of them, unfortunately. We go and we see Apollo fighting a bunch of them. They're overwhelming him. It's almost becoming too much. And he's just like, ah, fuck it. And just fucking blasts and shoots a bunch of these guys away. We also see the engineer dealing with a bunch of these guys. We see, but they just keep coming. Like, no matter what they do, more of them just keep coming and coming and coming. And you know, the newer guys are kind of having their moments of doubt. Like, Angela, the engineer, is talking to Hawksmoor. She's like, I'm not a soldier, Jack. And he says, no, you're an engineer. You're the woman who distilled an incalculable number of intelligent devices into 9 pints of liquid machinery and exchanged your blood for it. You can do anything you can think of. That was the point of your machines. And I know you wanted to build a safer world with them, but sometimes you have to fight and kick and bite for a better world, Angie. She's like, okay, shut up. I got it. And she does some crazy energy field thing and just fucks up a bunch of these guys too. We see Swift battling a bunch of them. Hawksmoor punching one of them, he's always like exploding their jaw. I just find that funny every time. We then go and Midnighter is inside Gamora Tower communicating with Jenny Sparks. He's saying, this is the Midnighter, we have problems. And he's saying, look, I've infiltrated Gamora Tower. I can see the full scale of this now. I just don't know how to break it. He's a bioreactor. He has a bioreactor pumping out superhuman clones. That's how he's doubling his strike forces each time. He's spliced superhuman traits into a selection of human genomes and just programmed this thing to keep on growing people at a rate accelerated past anything I've seen. So he is producing these guys faster than they can even destroy them all. And at this point, he hears a voice off panel saying, selection, pah. And here is Kaizen Gamora himself confronting the Midnighter. He says, it is the genetic material of my dead brothers and my terrifying and beautiful mother. My terrifying and beautiful mother deceased these last gray 30 years. They were forced to pay for the purity of Gamora with their blood. Now I give them back their glory. They scar the world for me. Well, now, what do we have here? An American superhuman in Gamora Tower. Don't you know where you are, boy? This is Earth's terminal point. Here is where the world revolves from. Midnighter just says, where the world turns. You've just given me a good idea. Door. And Gamora says, interesting. A door opens. Midnighter pops out through the door, jumps back into the carrier where he sees the doctor. And the doctor's, and he's like, what the fuck are you doing here? What happened to you? He's like, oh, I just reforested Los Angeles. And he's like, okay, ask a stupid question, get a stupid answer, I guess. And he yells, Carrier, can you hear me? God, how did you do this again? Carrier. And he's like trying to talk to the carrier. He's like, Carrier, I need you to move. excuse me. We then go back. I'm just gonna get, man,
that's what
that
you
thing
get from doing that problematic voice.
When you do the problematic voice, do problematic voice, they have problematic problems.
And Jenny says, we just electrocuted another wave of these guys, but I think LA's power grid's being hit, so she's losing her power because she sucks out electricity. So she's like, Midnighter, if you can hear us, we need an update fast. And he's like, I'm just taking the carrier out for a spin. She's like, what? He's like, yeah, he's got a bioreactor 2 miles long. He's got a mass teleport system and I can't break either of them. And you're all too busy. So I had to do some shit myself. All I can do, Jenny, is hit things until they don't work anymore. That was the skill that was built into me. Gamora's tower is too big and hard for me to hit. So, you know, it's like my father once said, hit the soft parts with your hand, hit the hard parts with a utensil. As we see, everybody at Gamora Island looking up in the sky. Well, suddenly they see the fucking carrier. It appears right there above Gamora Island. And he says, if anyone's interested, that farting sound was Gamora's force fields bursting. So he's using the carrier to burst through the force fields protecting Gamora Island. And he just brings this carrier and is driving it. I imagine killing fucking hundreds of thousands of people here because they show people running as everything is just destroyed. So again, this authority is not restrained necessarily by any certain overall moral restraint of any kind. We just see Kaizen Gamora staring at this thing from his tower as it's coming right at him. And he says, I only wanted to have some fun. When we go to Midnighter, has this crazy smile on his face as he is destroying this tower. And he just says, I love being me. And we see a full splash page of Gamora Tower being destroyed by the carrier. We go back to Los Angeles. We see all sorts of destruction and such. We see a bunch of these things dead. Swift is like, did we win? And Apollo shows up. He's like, yeah, all clear aerially. Central Park's a mess, but we contain it pretty well. And this is, you know, when this issue comes up again, because, you know, Shen Li was actually one of the voices against what had happened with Kaizen Gamora a couple of years ago. She was like, are we any better than him? So there is some consistency with the characters here that she is now the one once again bringing up the issue. And she's saying, you know, how many people do you think we killed? And Hawksmoor's like, how many people would have died if we hadn't been here? You know, it's not a great answer, I know, but it's the best there is. We saved more people than we killed. And Jenny's like, well, that'll do it for me. We managed something else too. I just spoke to Jackson King and Christine Trelane. They're going to scramble aid agencies into Gamora and a team of United Nations inspectors. Now, this is where we're going to get political, Remzo. Says, so it'll be a UN team, not a single country that'll find Gamora's bioreactor and teleport system. It'll be the UN holding ways of mass-producing human tissue from DNA scrapings, the UN holding a revolutionary mass transit system, and they'll know we know they have it. So give it 5 or 10 years of testing and building and building, and, well, the world will be a better place. And we hear, just as we wrap up, this is a priority transmission via the United Nations building in New York City, breaking across all commercial and private frequencies in all languages. This is Jennifer Sparks speaking for the authority. You are not alone. You want to get political before I go into the review?
Yeah.
We saw this in the last issue, too. This is Warren Ellis inserting his politics into this, which I actually don't have a problem with. I actually don't mind when creators put their politics in, as long as it's consistent and makes sense for the story. And I don't actually have a problem with it here either. But he is clearly putting forward this, oh, if we just give all the power to the world government, if we just give all the power to the UN, that would be fine. It's only when you have these other nations doing things that that's where there's disaster. But we take the same power, the same technology, give it to the UN. That's how things will work out great. And I just, the only thing I don't like about it is that it makes Jenny Sparks seem kind of lame to me, that she's like, you know, she's the one who's this independent person taking on this authority and trying to protect people. But now she's like, well, things will be better if we just give all this to the UN. I thought that was kind of a dumb soliloquy for Warren Ellis to just be putting onto her. That part doesn't seem so much in what should be her character. It seems more like just Warren Ellis pasting his politics on the end of the story, which is really my only criticism of the writing of this, to be honest, because I love it in general and I don't really have a problem with it. But it did take me out of it a little, especially to end on that speech. It's like, and that's the end of our story, is this fucking speech about the UN. But what do you think?
The UN is totally going to end up having some nonprofit agency come in who will end up absolutely trafficking Gamoran children.
That's in Stormwatch Volume 5 by Remzo Martinez.
The Clinton Foundation is providing aid to Gamora. What happened to all the children? Where did they go?
What do you think of this run?
I liked it way better than Stormwatch in both story and artwork.
Helps that it's 4 issues, not 14, yeah. Too, that we're looking
Big
at.
Big difference.
I don't know how the fuck did I ever do that. It's insane. But yeah, you want to give me your breakdown here?
You know, this reminds me a lot of the last JLA story we did. It's a globetrotting adventure, pretty linear, but you got a lot of good characterization. I'm going to be flat on both. I'm going to say, you know, story gets a 7.5, artwork gets an 8. No, that's not how we do scores. I'm sorry. I had a complete, like, you know, mental breakdown for a moment. It must be the chemicals in the air. As soon as I said anything negative about the UN, I'm giving the artwork a 3.5, and I'm going to give the story a 3.5, and I'm going to give the artwork a 4 for a total score of a 7.5 out of 10.
All right. Not too shabby. And yeah, I'm going to give the art, let's see, I'm going to give the art a 4. I like Brian Hitch's art. I don't think this is his best art. Some of the work seemed, I don't know, just maybe lacking some detail, but this is a minor criticism. I mean, a 4 is a very good story, and I really did enjoy the art of this, much as I did those last few issues of Stormwatch where he took over. So I have enjoyed his art. It really fits the story to me, the art here. And the story, again, this is very good. I really enjoyed the story from Warren Ellis. Not his best work, but it's very straightforward and with, like, sort of, I don't know, the politics is in the background until that last page. I'm taking off a half for him. I was going to give it a 4. The speech took me out of it. So I'm going to be right there with you. 3.5 on Warren Ellis' writing for a total of 7.5 here. Brings it to a total SBC score of 15 for this authority run. That's pretty good, though. I mean, that's still, you know, it's just below must read, but it's in, like, if you're into this kind of thing, definitely check it out. Zone.
If you're looking for a book that's different from the regular superhero genre stuff you've done. And I know last week we did Stillwater, and you know, the week before that we did that Moon Knight episode, which was very different from a lot of the other books that have been put out by Marvel recently.
All three of these books are couldn't be more different from each other, really. So we're getting some good variety.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to add some flavor to your library, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So if you've wanted to get a new book and you just don't know where to start, I mean, look back a good 20 years, you got something good right here.
Indeed. And yeah, so with that being said, I think that's about all we got. Of course, as always, don't forget, there are many ways to help us out. One is, of course, to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/secondprintpod, where you can currently hear Moon Knight recaps with Remzo and not Derek Franz, not Caleb.
Caleb Gordon.
Not Derek Franz.
I hope they're listening to this.
Not Derek Franz, not Caleb Gordon. You will hear the Moon Knight recaps. You'll also get What Mark Missed, where I'm currently trudging valiantly through the Ultimate Fantastic Four, through the rough patch anyway. And I hope it's just a patch. I really hope it's just a patch. But that's all I got. Remzo, what about you?
Folks, as always, we can't rely on the UN to save the world, but there's one thing you can do to help it, and it's read comics and change the world.
Good
night, America. You're not alone.
Adios.